high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. I'm over at a remote location, WOKV Studios, right here in beautiful Jacksonville, Florida. Be back with you tomorrow in New York City. We're coming to you pretty strong with so much breaking news. I'm not even sure what's going to be happening every 15 minutes, let alone what's going to be happening throughout the show. Here's what I can predict. We have standing by Politico's Dan Lipman's going to be with us shortly, and then Alan West joins us from Texas, where they're getting walloped by weather. Also, they have a situation right now in Texas where you have a much tighter Senate race for Ted Cruz than when he initially thought, and we'll discuss a lot of that, as well as that is ground zero still for what's happening with the immigration. So we're still trying to figure out if Joe Biden's going to be the nominee or not. If you ask him, he's definitely in. Before we get to Dan, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I'm absolutely confident that when all NATO leaders convene here this week, it will be great. We prepared all the important decisions we'll make here on defense, on support for Ukraine, and not least on burden sharing that European allies are now really stepping up.
Year 75 for NATO, the most successful alliance in the history of the West, of any modern day politics, if you can call that, since World War II. We'll discuss where this alliance is right now, the nervousness if Donald Trump takes over right now, and what pressure is on Joe Biden to do something extraordinary, and that is look competent. The stakes are extremely high.
Number two.
And then they introduced him and introduced me, and I walked out and I saw him, and he looked extremely pale, to put it nicely. And when he started to speak, I don't know, I thought his voice was weak. I didn't know exactly what was happening. It was strange.
You didn't even look at him. 2024, RNC 1 week away, and former president has been staying away from the spotlight, but speaks out about the debate. He will be joining us on Wednesday. His game plan and whether he thinks Joe Biden will be his opponent coming your way.
Number one.
The point is, for a campaign based on honesty and decency, the spin about the debate appears to be blatant bull. And the redemption tour hasn't gone that much better. Can't we stress test this candidacy? Can't we open up the conversation?
Yeah, you could have, John Stewart, but they didn't want to do that. RFK tried to get in. They kicked him out of the party. And then you had nobody else who stepped up. And then they moved the first primary to South Carolina, where Joe Biden would be strong and keep all the contenders away. Biden defiant. He stays. Dems meeting to see their options. And more details about President Biden's real health emerge. And the media finally starts doing its job with real questions. But is it too late? I can't believe what I'm seeing. I mean, let's think about this. We're watching Jake Tapper act like Sean Hannity, suddenly realizing he can't believe how bad Joe Biden does without a prompter, even with a prompter. Now, suddenly, we're looking at other things like the New York Times demand that Joe Biden step aside. Really? They said that he's failing. Oh, really? I had no idea. Please give me a pen. I don't know if it's handy. Remember when Robert Hur says he's a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory and everyone ripped Robert Hur as a partisan appointed by a Republican? Remember that? When he did the investigation into Joe Biden leaving 40 years of intelligence documentation in his various homes, including his garage, by his vintage Corvette. And then 3 weeks ago, I think it was 3 weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal writes a story about reports that Joe Biden's losing it behind the scenes. And they said this is bad reporting. It's attack journalism. Wall Street Journal hit a new low. Now everybody agrees with the Wall Street Journal. No apologies to anyone pointing this out before, only since the debate. The game plan was simple. It was destroy Donald Trump, make sure he, if he does get the nomination, make sure he's so damaged with court cases. I see their hands in all of it. And with his January 6th antics and his past impeachments, that Joe Biden will keep his head down, have surrogates do most of the campaigning, earn a ton of money, and be the president for the next 4 years. And what happened along the way? They demanded a debate, and it all fell apart. And now suddenly people are reporting. Dan Lipman joins us now from Politico. Dan, your thoughts about Joe Biden and the media suddenly realizing he's got problems.
Yeah, I think it's a long time coming, and the conservative media is kind of taking a victory lap because they say, hey, if you look at all these gaffes he's had over the years, that the signs were there, but that it was all crystallized with this debate performance. And remember, this was a debate that Biden wanted. He wanted to.
I know.
He wanted it very early because he is losing the swing states. He's losing nationally, and he has been since basically the start of this campaign. And so he wanted to, you know, kind of change the narrative and make some momentum. And he was it backfired on him.
So, Dan, there's a couple of things going on right now. This afternoon, some key senators are meeting, especially those in tough fights like Montana, in Pennsylvania, and in Michigan. They're going to be meeting behind closed doors to find out what their options are because Joe Biden is obviously not stepping away. And right now, the House caucus is meeting behind closed doors to decide where they're going. 9 members, 6 publicly. The most high-ranking one that I know of is Adam Smith, said that Joe Biden should step aside. And then the question is, what would be next? Kamala Harris is likely. I don't know how you step past her. They're talking about having a blitz primary where everyone pitches their wares. James Carville comes. I have an idea. Have Clinton, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama preside over the top nominees. Let them fight it out in some type of reality show situation where they pick a candidate and they sprint to the finish against Donald Trump. Seems implausible. Your thoughts about what's going to be different at the end of today as opposed to yesterday?
So we're going to try to wait to see if there's any more Democrats who come out publicly. The issue is if there's only a trickle by the end of this week, then Biden is probably going to be safe. You know, it really has to be a mass of Democrats, and they're all kind of having to hold their hands and jump into the deep end, because think of it in terms of if you're a Democrat who wants access to the administration and the White House, if Biden, for whatever reason, wins re-election, then your political career could be imperiled because the White House is not going to do you any favors if you, took a shot at the king and missed. And so, there's still, dozens of congressmen who have not who are still stepping behind Biden and have not called on him to leave. And they're all going to be watching this press conference on Thursday to see if he makes any stumbles and if he can appear strong enough. But the issue is most Americans were watching the debate last, a week and a half ago. They're not watching the NATO summit and how Biden does. And so they're kind of. If there's another debate, maybe he has another chance to reset expectations.
But the thing is, as you know, it isn't Barack Obama having a bad debate or George W. Bush losing to John Kerry in the first debate. It was the failings, the befuddlement, the confusion. So, that's what threw people. Not that you lost a debate. That's like going out in a game and being a Super Bowl champion, losing to the worst team of the league. You had a bad day. But you wonder if he's incapable. And we see behind closed doors, European leaders, diplomats, New York Magazine story about people looking him in the eye and say he's 40% not there, not being able to go meet with world leaders because he's too tired. And then you watch all the press corps, Dan, you must have flipped out watching some of this scrum yesterday. Listen to this, cut 7.
Well, I can tell you this, just going back to Parkinson's for a little bit, so to give you some answers here, has the president been treated for Parkinson's? No. Is he being treated for Parkinson's? No, he's not. Is he taking medication for Parkinson's? No. So those are the things that I can give you full-blown answers on, but I'm not going to confirm a specialist, any specialist that comes to the White House.
He signed the public logbook. It's a Parkinson's specialist. That is Kevin Connors, evidently his Joe Biden's doctor, was there present as well. So if you come 8 straight weeks, you have 8 visits to the White House. And then when you do an interview with George Stephanopoulos, you'll hold a pen in your hand. And some people say you do that when you have tremors. And then you leave your press secretary out there to say he doesn't have Parkinson's. This says you had probably had 7 separate reporters ask the same question, and they're now angry, Dan. Have you ever seen anything like it?
Not since the Trump administration, when combative press briefings were very
every
common.
Day. Yeah.
Every, they stopped holding them. But the issue is both policy-wise and also political. If you're the White House and the campaign talking about whether your candidate has Parkinson's, then the conversation and the focus of the campaign is not on Donald Trump and not on the opponent. It's not on his policy plans. It's not on the calls for tariffs that might tank the economy that economists say. It's not on whether he, you know, his promise to be dictator on day one. That, you know, even though he said he was joking, of course, but none of that matters when you're talking about the president's health. You can't really talk about, you know, but you can't really hear Biden talk about all of the bills he's passed, all the laws he's passed, and, you know, record low unemployment. That's not being talked about right now, and that is a problem for Democrats.
Right. I mean, there's issues there, too, with the infrastructure deal. What's been done? It's been 8 terminals. You want to make this electric cars, but something like only 70% of these terminals work, period. And then you find out that electric cars are falling off a cliff and you don't want to mine with your new Green Deal. You want to go get it from other countries. You can't even dive into an issue and debate it back and forth because people just say, is the president failing? So I want to bring it to some other things. I feel bad for this Andrea Lawful Sanders. So she gets a call that the president of the United States wants, she's a black radio host, and wants to get in touch with the black audience that he's losing, not entirely, but Mitt Romney had 8% of the black vote. This president Trump might have as much as 25% of the vote. So he's got to work on them. And this woman answers this question when asked about the interview she did with the president. Cut 13.
Were those questions given to you by the White House, or did you have, or the campaign, or did you have to submit questions ahead of this interview?
The questions were sent to me for approval. I approved them.
Okay, so the White House sent the questions to you ahead of the interview?
Yes.
Okay.
I got several questions, 8 of them, and the 4 that were chosen were the ones that I approved.
She got fired. So for the White House to think they can manipulate like that, I have no idea who this woman is. I just watched her on television, and I'm saying to myself, now she gets fired because the president demands a script. The president calls into Morning Joe and was flipping through papers. We don't know what papers they were, but I think it's kind of odd to call into a show and have to refer to papers. And we hear that shuffling back and forth. What's your reaction to some of this carnage on his rehab tour?
Yeah, well, the White House has said that it's not going to be sending questions anymore to radio hosts.
Oh, really?
This seems like political malpractice. That it's not like they're going to ask him about Section 35B of the Inflation Reduction Act. This is, the radio host should not have done the interview. Even though it's great to get a presidential interview, but if I was given a interview with any politician, and when I do, I never ask for, hey, what question should I ask? So it's like, that is, there are consequences. But the campaign, they were taking a risk when they were sending those questions, because I guess they just assumed that person would not answer truthfully or not go on CNN to be asked about the source of these questions. And this comes right after right around the time of the Stephanopoulos interview. And so that is just, head scratching behavior by everyone involved.
But I just feel, all of a sudden you're Andrea Lawful Sanders. You're at a radio station, and you get a call from the White House, and they say, would you like to speak to the president? Says, yes. And here are the 8 questions. You go, okay, great. You don't even realize, probably. This is a career-defining moment. You're brought to the national spotlight. I just feel bad for a person like that. Of course, instinctively, you should say no. But, I mean, I just feel now all of a sudden she's out of a job. By Saturday, she's out of a job. And I know nothing about her. I'm just sitting there going, oh, my goodness, how many more bodies are going to be in his wake?
It's really sad that happened. Biden has just not been very accessible. So he's doing, he's doing a press conference on Thursday, but he has not really done many press conferences. People can hate Trump, love Trump, but at least we got to know what was on his mind almost too much when he was tweeting and his staff were saying, what is he doing? Why is he firing cabinet members via, the White House lawn? And so it was just, almost too much access. The whole job is not to be talking to the media, but there is a balance to be struck, and the White House aides were insulating Biden to the extent that
right.
a lot of people did not know that he was less with it publicly, you know, in perception wise, at least.
Dan Libman doing the reporting with Politico. So, Dan, you think if the president gets to the end of the week, he still has a job, he keeps it. Am I correct? He keeps the nominee.
You know, it's not – there's not – Congress is going to be out of session next week with the Republican convention. I think that he has to get through Friday without more Democrats. But a majority of the Senate Democrats don't want him to run for reelection, but they are too scared to say that publicly just yet. That may change, but as of now, he had a really good day yesterday in terms of keeping people on his side.
So David Axelrod reports this real quick. He says, Trump's not talking much about Biden's bad debate. Trump's campaign is not blitzing ads about it. Lara Trump said last week it would be an affront to democracy if Biden were not the nominee. Question, why do you think they're uncharacteristically holding fire? I know the answer. And Axelrod knows the answer. It's because they want Biden, right? Final thought?
They do. There's, you know, they do much better with Biden than any other candidate, and they are smart political operations, so they are keeping their mouths shut.
Dan, it's going to be an exciting week. I look forward to reading what you report. Dan Libman, Politico, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, listen, when we come back, I'll try to squeeze in some calls. Bottom of the hour, we go out to Texas, 1-866-408-7669, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, what he expects from NATO and the alliance, and why I believe it's unjust that they're worried about Trump getting out of NATO. He's not getting out of NATO. Back in a moment.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
That is the sound of an expensive car repair about to happen. And to prevent breaking the bank with your out-of-warranty vehicle, you should call CarShield, America's number one automotive protection company. CarShield has helped save drivers big dollars on car repairs. Don't risk paying out of pocket for expensive repairs. For dollars a day, you can have protection coast to coast on up to 5,000 parts and systems. That's protection on your engine, transmission, entertainment system, plus so much more. And your plan also comes with 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, and rental options. Best of all, your rates will never go up as long as you cover your vehicle. That's money in the bank. All you have to do is call CarShield before a breakdown. Get protection on your car, truck, or SUV that comes with unlimited miles and the peace of mind you get with CarShield. Don't wait another minute. Call CarShield now. Call 800-204-0239. That's 800-204-0239.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think she should have consideration, but we shouldn't repeat the mistake that got us to this place, which was not to have a real primary. Primaries are a way to road test your candidates. And so if there's a way for us to have a real primary, it gives us the Democratic Party an option. And then it allows them to coalesce behind that person post-convention.
Stephanie Murphy, former congressman from Florida. Look, you're right. But it's not going to happen. I mean, you are in a politically correct party that's all about DEI. You're trying to screw up the Pentagon with this. You try to screw up every single company that tries to get involved with the CHIPS Act, invest and build and hire. It's all about DEI. And you cannot skip over the first African-American female vice president who could ascend to the presidency for the nomination and skip her at the same time try to get the black vote. You know who's not going to let you do it? This 60-member group called the Congressional Black Caucus. They will not let you do it. So even though John Stewart might be right and other Stephen Colbert might be right and Michael Moore might be right and Barack and David Axelrod might be right, it's not going to happen. It is going to be Kamala Harris if Joe Biden can't do it. And the only way I see Joe Biden bowing out right now is if they do the 25th Amendment, which means the vice president will have to be complicit. Crazy times. And one of the smartest things Donald Trump has done, and he'll be joining us tomorrow live, is stay out of it.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
it's hard to know whether this strike was timed to the NATO summit or not, because we've seen strikes from Russia against civilian infrastructure that have killed scores of civilians in previous weeks. So I don't know how to answer that question other than that this fits a pattern that we have seen from Russia going back to the outset of this conflict. So I certainly expect that these sorts of strikes would continue.
So that is Matt Miller, spokesperson for the State Department, talking about this horrific strike on a children's hospital that the Russians are aiming for. See, people are outraged about what's happening in Gaza. But you understand something. They go out of their way to make sure there's no civilian casualties. And if it is, it's a mistake. For Russia, it's an intent. Where is the outrage about this? Nobody goes crazy. What about the children? Nothing. You know, they find out that some people in Gaza who may or may not be members of Hamas die. I don't want any children, one child dead. But the reason why they're dead is because underneath the ground, Hamas fighters stay and hide in order to have the maximum amount of civilian deaths. This used to be a no-brainer. I would not even say this on this show because everybody listening knows this. But when I see what happens in these city streets, when I see these signs, when I see the anti-Semitic behavior, this anti-Israeli sentiment, not only from these idiot college students, but from many in the Democratic Party, beginning with the squad, but not ending there, and then going right through the White House these days, and certainly the vice president's office, I think it's got to be pointed out. And now you got 75 years in NATO, great alliance, it's valuable. That's how I see it. And that's how you should see it, too. And now they're all coming to Washington to celebrate 75 years and welcome in two fine countries, Sweden and Finland, and say, welcome. We need you. You're going to be a huge asset. You got to bulk up your spending on military, but you certainly have the fighters and sophistication to be an asset. But what the president's going to say and how he's going to lead and who's responsible for the 23 of the 32 nations that now are spending their 2% threshold, we'll discuss that with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He is the Dallas County Republican Party chairperson. KLIF listeners know him well, the American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida. Colonel, welcome back. Your thoughts about the Russians aiming for this hospital as NATO reconvenes. Is that a coincidence?
Well, no, I don't think it's coincidence. It's great to be with you, Brian. And, you know, we heard the International Criminal Court bring down charges against Benjamin Netanyahu for prosecuting a war against a designated terrorist organization that uses humans as shields. But where's the International Criminal Court? Where are they coming down on Vladimir Putin and this intentional strike against, you know, civilian infrastructure to include children? And so, you know, this hypocrisy, this double standard is reprehensible. And the left seems to be all into the cause celebration of what is happening with Hamas in Gaza. But yet they don't care about the Ukrainian children that they were killed. And remember how the left went crazy when they bought into the propaganda of the kids' hospital, the hospital being struck in Gaza. But it turned out that it was an Islamic Jihad missile. They hit it. They didn't come back and, you know, retract that or didn't speak too much about that. So I think this hypocrisy is laughable. But NATO has to stand up and be strong. And I think that when you look at Sweden and Finland, those are two very strong countries, especially the Finns. And when you look at their history, going back to World War II.
So I just think it's a fact. I love this alliance. And historically, I was just fascinated to see some quotes about what Eisenhower thought he'd do when he put this together. And he said, this is his quote, and I think it's important for people to understand, this is not from Trump, it's not from Biden, it's not from Alan West, this is from Eisenhower. And he says this, after World War II, if in 10 years all American troops stationed in Europe for national defense purposes have not been returned to the United States, then this whole project would have failed. As leaders of the NATO alliance gather in Washington, they say, keep that in mind. The Germany, Italy, Britain, we're all going to be rebuilt, and they were going to be not Germany. I know they had to be because of their experience in World War I and World War II. But all the other allies were supposed to build up and to get ready to defend themselves against the Soviet threat. And it's been hard as hell to get people to put money into their defense, especially since the wall came down. Bush has been frustrated. Clinton was frustrated. Obama was frustrated. And guess what? Donald Trump got him to spend more because he said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And why are you taking natural gas from Russia when you want us to defend you against Russia? The Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. So we were debating, and now they're both out, thankfully. So people should get a perspective on what's going on. We want, give us a time frame. What's it going to take to get your defense industry up? Because you got to defend yourselves, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think it's very funny, and it even came up during the presidential debate on CNN, this line of this narrative that Donald Trump is a friend of Vladimir Putin or he's allied or favors Vladimir Putin, that's absolutely not the case. When you look at what Donald Trump has done and standing up and getting NATO strong, the fact that he killed some 200 members of the Wagner group, their paramilitary group in Syria. So I think that you saw the strength of Donald Trump and you did not see the incursions of Vladimir Putin towards Ukraine or Georgia or any of these other intentions that he has. So I think we have to get strength back into the White House. And it'd be very interesting if I could be a fly on the wall sensing the undertones of this NATO meeting, if they're really, you know, depending upon Joe Biden or if they're thinking about there might be a return of a different sheriff to the White House.
Right. I mean, there's going to be pressure on Biden to lead, to actually stay up at night, even though he says he promised the Democratic governors he'll work less and go to bed earlier. Isn't that great? Isn't that great leadership? I promise. My big mistake is I was working too long and I'm up too late. Are you crazy? This is a 24-hour job. That's why it ages so many great men. You watch them age. It's basically textbook because of what that job does to you. And you don't want to do it an extra term. Eight is enough. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt kind of regrets it because he was still in his 40s. But most of these guys go, good, I'm done, I'm finished, I'm through. But here's what the one thing that's got everybody spending more. Trump saying, if you don't spend, I'm not going to protect you. And Russia taking Ukraine. They didn't believe it when they took a portion of Georgia. They didn't believe it that they were going to invade Ukraine, even though they took the Donbass and took Crimea. Now they believe it. So now they understand they got to do it. Now, the question is, how much do you push Germany? In the back of your mind, do you think about a militarized Germany? Should we be nervous about a unified, militarized Germany?
Well, I don't think that history will repeat itself. I think that it's about the type of leadership that you have in Germany. And also, I believe that the German people don't want to go down that path, but they also understand that they have to have some sense of national security. And I think that also they need to have some sense of their domestic security. The Islamic jihadists that are overtaking the streets in many of these European countries.
France.
That's something they need. Absolutely. It's horrible in France. I saw that, you know, speaking to people when I was over there in Normandy. They've got to stand up. Denmark, you see the new leader there in the Netherlands, Geert Wilders. So they're starting to be very concerned about this and how they have to protect their borders. And I think that you're going to see more pushback against this EU consortium and collective. And I think these countries want to get back to their own self-determination. And I don't think that Germany will go down that very bad and horrible path.
Right. And we'll see what's going to happen. I would love to see if Trump wins. I'd love to see a doubling of the defense budget intelligently, along with a massive audit of the Pentagon, simultaneously, if need be, or a six-month time limit. And there's already been some done. They do these audits, but there's no follow-through to execute anything.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I got to tell you, if you want to look at some of the biggest fraud, waste, and abuse in the United States budget, it's in the Department of Defense, but it's in the Pentagon. It's in these higher headquarters. We have got to get more focus on the trigger pullers, the people that are out there on the ground, and cut back on all of these, you know, big headquarters that are bloated, full of political appointees, and really 3- and 4-star generals that have forgotten their oath to the Constitution, and they have taken an oath to a political master.
So, Colonel, I'm astounded about what's going on right now with the press, with celebrities, with donors. I can't believe Joe Biden got so old. He's incompetent. Now we did debate. So now all of a sudden they got to get rid of him, but he's not leaving. And we are monitoring behind closed doors the whole Democratic caucus, House members are meeting this afternoon, Senate's meeting to decide if they're going to try to push Joe out. You know who's standing by Joe? Ilhan Omar and the squad, AOC, the squad. Ilhan Omar says he's the best president of our lifetime. By the way, stop endorsing me. That's one of the worst things that Joe Biden could hear, possibly. Yeah. But I want you to hear Michael Moore and try not to laugh your way through it. Cut 14.
The problem here is that I think there's a form of elder abuse going on here where the Democratic Party and the people that are part of the apparatus pushing him to stay. And then he comes out and he says, I'm staying. Watching the debate a week ago was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it was like, imagine that was your father up there. What would you want to, I'm thinking, why isn't anybody doing anything? Why didn't they do it? Why didn't they even let him go out on the stage in this condition? Who was looking out for him?
Is he out of his mind? You know how long we've been saying this? He hid in his basement to get the job, prompter, the handing questions over the press. He's answering the question before he almost reads the question instead of the answer. Teleprompters for 5-minute speeches to donors in people's living room. And now celebrities and higher ups are going, he can't be president. He's lost his mind. Have they lost their mind that we're not going to realize we've been saying this?
Well, the thing is that they really believe that they could deceive the American people, and it's falling apart. The whole thing about, you know, cheap fakes and what have you, this is before our eyes right now. But the interesting thing, Brian, is that I don't think these people really care about the country. They care about staying in power.
They care about
staying in control. And what these individuals that are coming out and speaking out about, they're worried about themselves being defeated in down ballot races under the president. And Ilhan Omar, of course she's happy to have Joe Biden as president because he's allowing Islamic jihadists to run amok and do whatever they want. And I don't think that she feels that she is threatened there in her Minneapolis-St. Paul district. So, yeah, she'll come out and continue to advance Joe Biden. So this is about self-preservation of certain Democrat candidates, and it is also about the preservation of a leftist Marxist ideology.
So this is how bad it's getting. You see now everybody reporting that a Parkinson's specialist, his name is Dr. Kennard, Kevin Kennard, who specializes in movement disorders and recently published a paper on Parkinson's. Well, according to White House logs, he visited from July 2023 through March of this year more than 8 times. And evidently it's right below the residence. He was there with Dr. Kevin O'Connor with the White House as well. He's the White House physician, as well as a cardiologist. Why would Dr. Kennard go to visit Joe Biden 8 times?
Yeah, a neurologist who specializes with cognitive issues. And furthermore, the thing that we have to question, there is no log that's kept at the president's house in Delaware. So how many times has he been there and we are not aware of it? And if you watch any bit of the White House press conference yesterday, Karine Jean-Pierre just got lit up because I think the press has finally realized, you know, you've been lying to us. And who is this doctor? Why is he coming in there? And Ronnie Jackson, the former presidential doctor, he called out this Dr. O'Connor and said that this is all a bunch of crap that these guys are saying. So we've got an issue. I mean, I think that we have had a president that has been mentally impaired for quite some time, a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And so this is a constitutional crisis.
All right. So you used to my opinion on this show, and you watch the network, you have a certain opinion on their show, Neil Cavuto, different than Sean Hannity. But you pretty much would watch Sean Hannity. He's like, does anyone realize this guy's out of his mind? I mean, you have President Biden once in a while show that he might be with it, but not longer than 5 minutes, and they hide him away. Now, all of a sudden, guess who really believes that Joe Biden has lost it? A guy that's been covering for him for years, Jake Tapper. Listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
Cut 24.
Did you ever watch the debate afterwards?
I don't think I did, no.
He doesn't think he did? After facing increasing pressure to demonstrate in public an ability to take questions and respond cogently for a lengthy period of time live about what he wants to do with the United States, his message, his plans, his policies, the president and his team have not held a press conference to demonstrate just that. He continues to do what he has done sparingly in the past, a short tape sit down with an anchor, in this case, George Stephanopoulos of ABC News.
So 8 million people watched that. 50 million plus watched the debate. Now Jake Tapper is delving into the answers of Joe Biden. I laugh out loud when I hear this.
Well, look, Brian, maybe there are some people that do actually care about their credibility in the field of journalism. I was very pleased to see that the radio station kind of forced the woman who took the questions from the White House and did that radio. They forced her out. But yet you hear someone on MSNBC by the name of Joy Reid says that she'd vote for President Biden even if he was in a coma. And so I think people are really concerned about their own personal credibility, and they don't want to be part of this SS Biden Titanic.
Also, they're pretending that Donald Trump's intolerable and he'll destroy the country and become a dictator. Everybody knows it was a one throwaway line that he said on the first day, I'm going to seal the border, I'll be a dictator. Yeah. And now they keep leaning on that. Colonel, thanks so much. I know Texas being walloped by a hurricane, but hopefully everything's okay in Dallas. Appreciate it, Colonel.
Yeah, it missed us. It went east. But God bless those people that did get affected. Thank you, Brian.
All right, go get them. Meanwhile, 1-866-408-7669. We're monitoring what's going on behind closed doors right now with the Democratic leadership. Their caucus in the House and what's going to happen this afternoon. Every time we come back, we might have breaking news involving the next president of the United States. So don't go anywhere.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Authoritarianism and Donald Trump aren't the only threats our democracy faces. An arthritic status quo, unable or unwilling to respond in any way to the concerns of voters who just received new and urgent information about their candidate, also erodes confidence and faith in the system of government. Honestly, though, get on board or shut the fuck up is not a particularly compelling pro-democracy bumper sticker.
I 100% agree. I missed, I like Jon Stewart's on Mondays. You know, it's two-thirds anti-Trump, but one-third legitimate, as we're all seeing this train wreck, and no one was acknowledging it over the last 2 weeks. Excuse me for going backwards. I'm just befuddled. Sometimes I have on other channels, and I can't believe it looks like our channel, because they're doing real reporting. And you know, the New York Times was praising itself for the great reporting on the real health of Joe Biden behind the scenes, while you ignored it for 3.5 years, even to get him elected the first time. Quick moment, quick note, Sherman Theater, July 27th, 6 o'clock, History, Liberty, and Laughs. I'm going back to Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. I went to soccer camp there. Now we're going to be on stage. Get your tickets, BrianKilmeade.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. This is Brian Kilmeade. I'm happy to be with you now that we're all through the 4th of July weekend. We're back in action now, and there is so much action to take place. It's one of those weekends they always say, you know, this is one of those weekends like Christmas where you probably want to take off because it's so slow news days. Just like they say on Friday in the afternoons, really not much goes on. And then there's this year, and there's this cycle. And there's Joe Biden's debate performance, and he waits 4 days to do anything about it. His party goes apocalyptic, and now he's desperate to hang on. And we're bringing the latest on that. Mark Thiessen standing by, and then we're also going to have Steph Knight, who is with Axios at a different hour at Politico. We just want to get to reporting the very latest. Keep the bias out of it. I want to know what's happening. The best your sources can tell you behind closed doors, many of which want to leak to show that they're in a battleground state, that they're not happy who's on top, as opposed to voting with the person on top, Joe Biden. So before we get to Mark Thiessen, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I'm absolutely confident that when all NATO leaders convene here this week, it will be great. We prepared all the important decisions we'll make here on defense, on support for Ukraine, and not least on burnishing that European allies are now really stepping up.
Jan Stoltenberg, who's going to be the outgoing NATO leader, is talking about the significance of 75 years of this alliance. Mark Thiessen will break down exactly what this alliance is spending and not spending and where it goes from here.
Number two.
And then they introduced him and introduced me, and I walked out on his arm, and he looked extremely pale, to put it nicely. And when he started to speak, I don't know, I thought his voice was weak. I didn't know exactly what was happening. It was strange.
There you go. 2024, the RNC, 1 week away, and former President Trump has been staying away from the spotlight, but speaks out about the debate last night with Sean Hannity. Tomorrow, he'll be on this show, his game plan, and whether he thinks Biden will be his opponent coming your way.
Number one.
The point is, for a campaign based on honesty and decency, the spin about the debate appears to be blatant bull. And the redemption tour hasn't gone that much better. Can't we stress test this candidacy? Can't we open up the conversation?
Yeah, Jon Stewart, desperate, leaves the comedy behind and talks about what's happening with the comedy at the DNC. Biden defiant. He is staying. Dems meeting to see their options and more details and see more details about President Biden's real health. And we'll see what emerges from the media frenzy. It looks like the Democratic caucus meeting among House members has just broken up. They've exited with sunglasses on and no statement because it was supposed to be a secret meeting. This afternoon, I'm going to hear from the Senate. Today, around now, House Republican leaders, Speaker Johnson, Scalise, and Stefanik will hold a presser any minute. If any news comes out of that, we'll talk about it. At 5 o'clock, the president delivers remarks on the 75th anniversary of NATO. We'll be on pins and needles. And at 7:30, President Zelensky delivers his remarks at the Reagan Institute during the NATO Washington visit. And it's a lot of drama. Mark Thiessen all over it. Mark wrote a brilliant column with the Washington Post, well-researched as usual, talking about what has happened in NATO since Donald Trump came over and when the Russians came into Ukraine. Mark, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian.
Mark, you were kind enough to join me live Saturday night on One Nation. Since that time, any thoughts about the chances of Joe Biden staying? I think he stays. They said if he lasts the week, he stays for good. Your thoughts?
Yeah, 100%. Look, you know, all these rumors about like Mark Warner was going to bring a bunch of senators over to the White House to talk him into leaving. It's like, you know, that this was like Goldwater with Nixon. It's like Goldwater was going to inform Nixon that he had a choice to step down or to be convicted and removed from office. He was telling him the Republicans were going to vote against him in his impeachment trial. Warner has no leverage. Nobody has any leverage. Under our system, Joe Biden has the delegates, and if he wants to stay as the nominee, he's got the delegates. He stays as the nominee, and nobody can force him to. His family doesn't want him to leave because he's the gravy train. He's the, you know, he's the meal ticket. So they don't want, you know, they're willing to commit elder abuse in order to keep him on the ticket. And then they've got systemic obstacles. Kamala Harris is less popular than he is. If you look at the RCP average, he's at like 38.7 or something like that. She's at 36 in approval. So she's less popular than he is. And the Democratic Party is not going to kick the first black woman vice president to the curb in order to put a white male on the ticket. So there's not going to be any Josh Shapiro, not going to be any Gavin Newsom, not going to be any of these other people. It's either him or Kamala Harris. And they don't want to put Kamala Harris on the top of the ticket. And even if they could get past Kamala Harris, who's their alternative? They've got nobody. Why is Joe Biden president today? Why do we have an 81-year-old senile man in the Oval Office today? Because they couldn't find anybody else 4 years ago, because it was going to be Bernie Sanders, because all the other candidates imploded. And Bernie Sanders was running away with the nomination, so they decided to circle the wagons around Joe Biden as the least worst candidate. And he's still the least worst candidate. He's just a lot worse than he was 4 years ago.
So now we have NATO meeting in Washington, D.C., and you got two new members, and they're fine members, huge assets, Sweden and Finland. Great news. But part of the reason is because of Russia invading, it's no longer theoretical. Georgia isn't a one-off. Taking the Donbass region and Crimea doesn't make sense. Invading, trying to take a country is real. So they've responded. You've done some math. How has NATO changed since the invasion? And why does Joe Biden take so much credit for 23 nations hitting the 2% threshold?
So keep this in mind. So he's running around taking credit for all the NATO spending. 80% of the new spending was committed when Donald Trump was president. 80% of it is because of Trump. So, and the other 20% is probably because of Putin, not because of any diplomatic skills that Joe Biden has. When NATO committed in 2006 to spend, every country would spend 2% of its GDP on defense. When Trump came into office a decade later, there were only three allies that were doing that, and they had reached the lowest level of spending as a percent of GDP as an alliance in the history of the alliance, right? And so Trump said, "No more. If you want us to defend you, if you want the United States to be the bulwark of this alliance, you got to start spending." And he got them to pony up $130 billion more in spending while he was in office. And before he left office, they had committed by 2024 that they would spend $400 billion more. We're now at 2024, and the projection is $500 billion. So that means 510. So that means 80% of it is Trump. And the rest is Putin. And he left the alliance stronger than it had ever been. And the way he did it was with tough love. He said to them, don't take America for granted anymore. What happened was the Europeans were just collecting this peace dividend after the post-Cold War peace had ended. And they were just depending on us to subsidize socialism in Europe by us spending all the money to defend Europe. And he said, not anymore. If you want us to defend you, if you want us to be in this alliance, you got to pony up. You got to carry your weight. And they did.
Do you believe, from your discussions with Donald Trump and your communication, do you believe he wants to leave NATO?
I don't think he wants to leave NATO. I think he wants to make it stronger, but he doesn't want America to get fleeced. I think he thinks that a lot of countries take advantage of us, and he's right. And so I think he wants to make them spend more money. So what I think he should do, I have an essay in the Post today laying out a MAGA agenda for NATO and how he can make NATO great again. One of the most important things to do is say 2%, great. Now we got to go to 3% of GDP. Raise it another percentage point, and if you want to be America to defend you, every NATO ally has to spend that amount of money. And then I think we need to increase our defense spending here at home. We need a second Trump defense buildup in this country. We've got Russia, we've got China, we've got Iran, we've got North Korea. All these countries are forming a new axis of powers that are challenging the United States and our allies around the world. We can't keep up. Joe Biden has had net defense spending decreases every single year of his presidency. We are now spending less on defense as a percentage of GDP than at any time since 1999, after the end of the Cold War, when Bill Clinton tried to collect a peace dividend. We can't keep up with China if we're not investing in our defense. And so we've got to increase defense spending.
You bring up that Reagan spent 6.2% of the GDP on defense. That Jimmy Carter even at 4.5%. You think we should get up to 5%. And I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. But
drop under 3% for the first time since the 1990s.
And by the way, what's inflation? So we're losing money, losing time. So Mark, what I would love to do, and the way Trump should outline it is, look, I need everybody to spend 3%. I need you to buy weapons from us.
Yes.
And that would also help finance our defense buildup. So they're buying weapons for us. We get the friends and families discount. We began to be able to replenish and repair our equipment. So we're not having to try to find MiG parts and Russian old Soviet era parts to help Ukraine get what they have left of a force. And some of these Baltic regions, all they have is former Soviet equipment. So we could start modernizing NATO, make them more formidable, train them to defend themselves, bring up their collective self-esteem, too, and not dependence. Allow us to focus on as you mentioned, that Austin calls China the pacing threat. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep pace with us or surpass us. They don't have quality people, but they got equipment. They got more of it. So how do we keep up? And the message sent in this process will make the world a safer place.
Yeah, 100%. And on top of that, going forward with Ukraine, the Europeans have seized almost $300 billion in Russian assets. And what they're saying now is they're going to use the interest from that to buy weapons. No, they should take that money, that $300 billion, seize it, and give it to Ukraine to buy weapons from us. That's how you fund this war going forward. You give the money to the Ukrainians in some sort of a trust fund, and they right. buy weapons from us, and then America gets the Russian money.
So
we get the money. We provide weapons to Ukraine, which they can defend themselves. And then when Ukraine succeeds, Ukraine has tens of trillions of dollars in titanium, in iron ore, in coal, and all the rest of that. If Russia wins that war, Russia gets all those natural resources. If Trump can negotiate a peace that keeps Ukraine in control of its territory and stops the threat of war from Russia, we can get those natural resources for the United States. So, you know, yeah. he's got to think about this through the prism of America's self-interest.
So a couple of things, Mark. There's a lot of people listening to us right now who are going to vote for Trump and don't believe that we should even be in this alliance. They also don't believe that we should be building up our defense like Senator Rand Paul to this degree. We have a $37 trillion deficit. Why is Brian Kilmeade talking to Mark Thiessen about building up our defense? We can't afford it. What's your reaction to that?
Just look at the Reagan Institute poll that just came out. I did a column on this. It is a myth that Trump voters are isolationist. In fact, the Reagan Institute poll found that that MAGA voters are less isolationist and more demanding of American leadership in the world than non-MAGA establishment Republicans. They want to invest. 7 in 10 MAGA Republicans say that we should come to the defense of a NATO ally if it's attacked. Now, that drops by about 30 points if that ally is not spending its 2% of GDP. But they believe in NATO. They support NATO. They think that we should be coming to the defense of our allies. They think that it's important that Ukraine wins the war, that it's important to U.S. national interests on every measure. The Reagan poll went through China, defending Taiwan, like that. MAGA voters are more hawkish and less isolationist than non-MAGA Republicans. The people who want – I think the number of people who said they want Russia to win is like 8%. It's almost negligible. So the Tucker Carlson view is a deep, deep, deep minority view in the GOP. They just don't want us to be fleeced. They want America to be strong again.
Right.
They want strong presidential leadership. What they don't like about what's happening in Ukraine is that Biden doesn't have a strategy to win. This should be over by now. You know, it's like part of the critique of endless wars is the endless part. You know, if Trump were president right now, the war would have never happened, and it would be over by now because he would have given Ukraine the weapons to win it when they were on the offensive. If Trump had been president, Hamas would have never attacked Israel, and if they did, he would have unleashed. It would be over by now. So we got to stop the endless wars. But the way to do it is to make sure that the wars don't happen, and two, if they do, that they're over fast.
All right, and before I let you go, we only have a couple minutes left. I just want to bring you back to the news at hand. We're trying to find out what Democrats have agreed upon behind closed doors. Are they going to call for the president to resign among House members? What about the John Testers of the world, the Senator Casey's of the world, worried about losing their states and their Senate seats? Are they going to speak out? Is Warner going to have the courage to do it? Or whatever happens, happens. It's hard not to see. It's hard not to have an opinion, but I'm just astounded at the media suddenly trying to scrutinize everything Joe Biden's saying. Like yesterday, he calls into a morning show on MSNBC, and this is how he tries to assuage those who think he's lost it. Cut to.
And I've not lost. I haven't lost. I beat him last time. I'll beat him this time. And this is a guy who, look, we talk about debates. Look at his performance with debates. He lied over, you know, Trump has 50 lies. Look, this is a guy who says 10% of the universe. I don't want to get into it. He's just a liar. And he hasn't done a damn thing since the debate. He's been riding around in the golf cart for 10 days or down in Mar-a-Lago talking with his wealthy friend. I'm not running because of these guys.
So what is he talking about? I'm not running because of these guys. Then he says in the middle of it, I mean, look, this is a guy who says 10% of the universe. Yeah, I want to get it back. What does that mean?
I don't even know what it means. But look, Trump is – you're right. He's been sitting around riding around in a golf cart.
On purpose.
He's letting Joe Biden implode. He's letting him twist in the wind. That is smart. That is discipline. That is a winning candidate. That is a winning strategy. You know, Joe Biden won with the basement strategy in 2020. Well, Trump's winning with a golf cart strategy in 2024.
10 seconds left. Who's going to be your vice president pick? Who would be yours, Mark Thiessen?
Anybody but J.D. Vance.
Mark Thiessen, thanks so much. Read his column of the Washington Post, and and it'll really give you an idea of what's been going on in NATO and why Trump was right the whole time. And by the way, to quote Leo DiCaprio, he's not leaving NATO. All right? Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The competing virtue here, there's another competing virtue, and that is self-sacrifice. And self-sacrifice takes a particular kind of courage. And that is a courage I believe Joe Biden is capable of. I believe he's a good enough man, he is a good enough president to put the needs of the country ahead of the needs of his ego. And however painful that might be, it is possible handing leadership to a younger generation is the right thing for the greater goodest. Or good as, either one.
And goodest is mocking Joe Biden, who used that term goodest. I'm the goodest candidate. And that was brought up by Maureen Dowd in her New York Times column. That's the funny guy, Stephen Colbert, late night comedian, who is basically a political pundit. His show belongs on MSNBC. I'm not saying he's not without talent. I hear he's a great guy. People that live by him, including our own Martha McCallum, say he's a nice guy. But he's ridiculous. I mean, he is a left-wing pundit. That's all he is. I mean, it's an embarrassment. Him and Jimmy Kimmel live to get Democrats elected. And I can't believe networks are okay with that. At least Jimmy Fallon shows his wide swath of comedic ability and, you know, now always be anti-Trump. At least people are going to go to town on Joe Biden being out of his mind. For Donald Trump, he's going to be with Marco Rubio today. Is that a trial run? And in Pennsylvania, you'll see J.D. Vance later on this week with President Trump. Is that a trial run? It's very close to Ohio, obviously. I think, and my sources say, Thursday he will name a running mate because they got to get security in place for the RNC. And they want to line up everything. And they don't want to string people along any longer than they have to.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But before the president did that, he called into a couple of black radio stations where he said, among other things, this.
By the way, I'm proud to be, as I said, the first vice president, first black woman, mm-hmm. served with a black president. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of the first black woman in the Supreme Court. There's just so much that we can do, because together there's nothing. Look, this is the United States of America.
He's proud to be the first black woman. Not coherent.
Right. When are you realizing that, Jake? What, ever since the debate? Did you not know going into the debate? I mean, my goodness. I mean, were you that crazed about Donald Trump you weren't even looking at the current president? I'm just astounded why everyone is killing this President Biden now. And they're looking to knock him out, but he's not going anywhere. They're behind closed doors. The Democratic caucus met from the House members. Seth Moulton, who has already called for President Biden to step aside, said this. One of the Dems who called on Biden to step down, leaving the meeting, said he stated this. Everyone was listening very carefully to a variety of positions. And that's exactly the kind of debate we need. This is about democracy. This is what it's about, democracy, right? So it means nothing has been concluded. And joining us now from Axios, Steph Kite joins us. Steph, what a time. You believe today is D-Day for Biden. I think that this week is D-Week for Joe Biden. Any reporting from what happened behind closed doors this morning?
Yeah, well, this is certainly a big day, and I agree, a big week for Biden, as we see Congress actually gather together for the first time since that debate night, which triggered all of these questions around whether Biden should remain at the top of the Democratic ticket. And as you mentioned, House Democrats have already met, and it does sound like there was a pretty vigorous discussion from people on all sides of this. We have obviously started to see a trickle of names come out, people who are willing to go on the record and call for Biden to step aside. But we have also been hearing from some of Biden's supporters. Yesterday, I was up on the Hill, and you know, it was clear that there are also Democratic lawmakers who are going to defend Biden no matter what. So we're seeing this real divide in the Democratic Party. And, you know, this was really the first opportunity for Democrats to get together and try to hash this out. And so we'll have to see whether that conversation leads to additional people calling for Biden to step aside, whether we continue to hear the concerns that we've heard from both senators and House members, or whether Democrats decide to move on from this and, you know, rally together and get behind Biden once again. And Senate Democrats will be meeting for lunch in just a little bit, and I'll be watching that very closely as well.
So we understand that John Tester came out and said President Biden has got to prove to the American people, including me, that he's up to the job. We have other people concerned, like, for example, it'll directly affect Tester if he's at the top of the ticket, nobody wants to vote for him, especially in a red state like Montana. Calling for him to drop out, Congresswoman Angie Craig of Minnesota, which is now in play, it seems. Lloyd Dockett was the first. Seth Moulton, as I mentioned, Mike Quigley, Adam Smith, a high-profile name, and Jerry Nadler. But so far, the squad is staying with him. And most importantly, Steph, the Congressional Black Caucus. When people talk about a death blow, if the Congressional Black Caucus says, Joe, go, do you think that would be the one who pulls the plug on him?
I mean, that would be hugely influential. That would be a big blow to Biden if he lost the Black Caucus. It, you know, they have been some of the few voices to be quite loudly backing Biden from ever since the debate. They've been, you know, the bloc that really hasn't shifted. And while some may have raised some temporary concerns, what we continue to hear from Black members of Congress is that they are riding with Biden no matter what. And so, yes, that would be a hugely consequential move if we saw any shift in that kind of support. And the fact is that we have, they're not the only bloc of lawmakers who have expressed support for Biden. And, you know, yesterday seemed to be a little bit of a better day for Biden in the midst of all of this. You know, he sent a letter to lawmakers defending his position, acknowledging that the debate night was not his best night. And that seemed to have been at least, you know, effective on the margins. It seemed to at least stem the flow. We did not see a flood of lawmakers coming out and calling for Biden to step aside. We continue to hear very real concerns, and we've seen, you know, Senate Democrats in particular kind of walk up to that line saying that they need Biden to really prove to the American voters that he is able to do this job.
Right.
But that's as far as they've been willing to go so far, at least on the Senate side.
I mean, Steph, he did say in that, you know, there seemed to be papers rustling back when he called into Morning Joe. We did hear him call into that black radio station. They gave the they told the host, the anchor, here are the 8 questions. Pick 4 that you can ask. And then we find out, then we hear it, some of his answers where he called himself a black woman, where he's misstating. You and I can make mistakes. It happens. But when people are listening and this is his rehab, I'm competent tour, you shouldn't be making those mistakes. Now, the stakes today, he's got to open up NATO summit. Got it. Thursday, is that the debate? Is that when he's having his press conference alone?
Yes, Thursday, the president will be facing the press and will be needing to take questions from the press really for the first time since this whole debate situation began to unfold. And I mean, I think everyone in Washington and everyone in the U.S. is going to be watching that press conference very closely, because Biden does have real questions to answer to the American people. And, you know, you pointed out it has been sort of a sloppy couple of weeks or days since the debate, with the way the Biden campaign and you know, Biden advisors have been handling the fallout. Of course, finding out that there were questions provided to radio hosts was a huge blow. And I do think it's interesting that they have chosen to communicate this week via a written letter, as well as a phone call into their favorite television show, as opposed to, you know, something physical, a video conference of some kind. So Thursday really will be a huge moment where we see the president himself actually having to speak off the cuff and answer questions. And that's going to be a critical moment for Biden and his campaign.
So what I think is interesting is if the poll numbers, you know, the look at the Emerson poll. He's trailing in every battleground state. It's a little bit better in the Bloomberg poll, but that's more of a tracking poll. And if you see what's going on, that's what has Democrats worried, not his mental health. It was the poll numbers that he could lose, which I wanted to take a step back to and go, wait a second. Do we understand there's a problem with him working past 8 o'clock? He pledged to Democratic governors, I'm going to sleep more and go to bed earlier. That's not the vigor you're looking for with a job that is the most demanding in the world that you're asking for 4 more years. And to say, and we have European diplomats coming out saying, and we see that he doesn't go to certain events because he's too tired. And when you talk about the NATO summit or the D-Day celebration, that's not a strong audition. Steph, if you wanted to be at work at Axios and you said, I'm going to work less, I'm going to go to bed earlier, you probably wouldn't have got the job.
I mean, look, these are the exact concerns that are leading so many Democrats to take this very seriously. I mean, I think you know, take a step back, and it is remarkable that so many Democrats are unwilling to give full-throated defenses of their own president, their own incumbent candidate for president of the United States at this point in the election cycle. We are coming up on conventions. This would never be even a question. We would never have seen this kind of reaction if the concerns weren't as clear as they are. The fact that we, you know, don't hear leadership, members of leadership giving full-throated defenses of Biden. We don't hear them telling their members or senators to stop the complaining. That just points to how seriously they do take the reporting that Axios and others have been offering over the past several months, and also that we saw at the debate, that there are real concerns that Biden does have limitations, and the White House and people close to Biden have been hesitant to admit that, and that there has been effort to kind of minimize what the American people see. So, you know, all of your points are valid in the sense that those are all things that are being considered by Democrats, and the fact that they are even considering something like asking the president of the United States to step aside is just an indication of how serious this is.
And I would say this, the New York Times today, a myriad of reasons why he should step aside. Ezra Klein writes, Democrats need to choose another candidate. They need to make the process as competitive as possible. Harris would be the front runner, but you should not give it to her. Clyburn seems open to it. At the same time, he says we can't close. He says he'd be open to a mini primary. I would support that absolutely. But I think Kamala Harris would acquit herself very well in that. But skipping over Kamala Harris would have perils for the Democratic Party because they fancy themselves such a DEI party where Republicans have no problem. If Donald Trump picks a white male, okay. If he doesn't, picks a woman, it's okay. But for Democrats, they were going to say, okay, we have a female black vice president. And when it's time for the white male to step aside, we bypass the female black vice president and we put it into a scrum. That's not a good look.
I mean, it would definitely be difficult for anyone to you know, mount a serious race against Harris if this situation were to unfold. And that is something I continue to hear from Democratic sources and people close to the situation, that, you know, Kamala Harris would be viewed as the likely successor if Biden did decide to step aside. And yes, to your point, it would be very unlikely and not a good look for Democrats to move past their vice president, who is the first black female vice president in the United States. And there is, you know, an element to that awareness of getting those first and having diversity at the top of the ticket that Democrats do prize. But the other reality is that she is the vice president and she does still have very high name recognition, even in comparison to other potential candidates that we would see floated. So, you know, it would be likely that she would be the person to take up the mantle. The other thing to consider here is just the money side of it. Because Harris is on the ticket with Biden, it would make things easier to use those campaign funds that the Biden campaign has been building and raising over the past several months. It would make things easier to immediately turn that money and attention to Harris versus having to bring in someone who is not already on the ticket.
I just don't see a scenario where he's as defined as you can be. Jill Biden is defined as you can be. The staff obviously put together this letter, so they want him, his personal staff wants him to stay. And is there a scenario where the cabinet members rise up? Have you heard that and said 25th Amendment? He's nodding off. He's nodding off in meetings with the Wall Street Journal reported a few weeks ago. It's even worse. So we are putting the 25th Amendment in. That would have to be led by the vice president, I imagine. Do you see that as the possibility?
Look, I don't think we are at that point yet. Yes, this is something that would have to be led by Vice President Harris, and it would have to be agreed upon by the cabinet people who were brought in by President Biden and who have had his back from the beginning for many of them. So that's not a likely scenario at this point. We, of course, have been hearing from Republicans who have been calling for something like that to happen, you know, saying that Biden is not equipped to be president right now, much less in, you know, 4 or 5 years from now. But, you know, it is very unlikely, and we are certainly not at that place right now. And you know, this is a shifting situation. And while things may be calming down ever so slightly since yesterday, all it takes is one more bad press conference, one more bad public speech by the president to bring this mm-hmm. back again. And that is a concern that we've also heard from Democratic lawmakers, that if Biden doesn't step aside, this could continue to be the storyline from now till November, that we will continue to talk about any situation in which the president, you know, makes a gaffe on stage or mm-hmm. struggles to get down steps. And that's not something the Democratic Party wants to be dealing with.
They aren't. They want to highlight Donald Trump, but not only he's been successful beating or postponing his cases, he's been quiet for the last 12 days. He's getting set to ramp up the RNC and the positive press, most likely, that's going to emerge from him picking a running mate. So on running mate, I'm hearing Thursday is going to be the day. That was before this utter chaos that's heating up at the end of the week with Biden. Do you hear that he's going to make the pick before the RNC?
You know, that is something we've been hearing, but, I mean, we all know how it works in Trump world, and you just never know until that decision is finally made. We, of course, have been hearing that they would announce in the run-up to the convention, and they planned to use that announcement to host fundraisers and really set up their vice presidential pick during the convention. It will, you know, we do know that the Trump campaign has been very strategic in response to the Biden fallout. They have been, you know, very quiet, allowing the spotlight to remain on Biden because they know that this is not a good kind of spotlight for Biden to be dealing with. So whether they make adjustments to their VP pick plans in order to keep the heat on Biden will be something to watch.
He'll be on the prompter today, I think, at 5 o'clock. With the official delivering remarks on the 75th anniversary of NATO. Everybody's here. We're going to get behind the scenes. I'm sure people are going to be speaking to their sources and other leaders of the other NATO nations to see what impression they have of the president. And then there's a sense that Donald Trump could win. They are very tapped into our elections, and we'll see how that reaction is. Very exciting time. Steph Kite, thanks so much of Axios.
Thanks for having me.
1-866-408-7669. I'll try to bring up some calls. But when we come back, what comedians are saying about Donald Trump, often their greatest allies are the late night shows. Not anymore. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Now, after the debate, Biden's team tried to put out the fire with a bucket of gasoline, telling reporters that the president's weak performance was because he had a cold. Oh, I hate those summer colds where your voice gets hoarse and your brain explodes. Another issue was that during the debate, Biden looked a little less than fresh. But his aides had an excuse, taking full responsibility for the pale makeup. Pale makeup? You work for Joe Biden. Why do you even own pale makeup? He's already an 81-year-old Irishman. He's translucent.
They also say this, and he's 100% right, and it's funny to hear them laugh at a guy they refused to laugh at, but now they want him out, so they're going to mock him. But the one thing to keep in mind is that people that get close to him, and in this New York Magazine article I encourage you all to read, they say that, you know, he's had so much facial work done, it has really worked to his detriment. Now, people say, oh, I want to look good when I get older, and that's fine. Well, get it done professionally. Don't do nine times in a row. I mean, this guy was getting hair plugs in the 1980s because he was nobody wants to go bald. But that was his decision. So, you know, as he got older, he was going to be just probably as aggressive about that as he was about his hair. So he's gotten multiple facelifts. And it's so tight, it makes him look like a mannequin. That does not help. I mean, who's consulting him? They talk about this tight, this family. Does anyone say, Joe, you don't need it? Also, when you have two aneurysms, it is dangerous to go under anesthesia. Plastic surgery, you got to be under anesthesia. When he has three or four facelifts, why are you putting his brain through that? It was never that strong to begin with. And now you have a situation where he's clearly not there. They say people that know him, 40% of the time, he's not with it. And you look in his eyes, you can't even see his eyes. His face is so pulled back. All working against him. The person that's working to keep him there is Jill Biden. But I don't want to elect Jill Biden. Do you? They go to BrianKilmeade.com. See me in person. It's wonderful. Ask people that know me. July 27th, History, Liberty, and Left. BrianKilmeade.com. See you on stage.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm not in New York like I usually am. I'm in the beautiful studios at WOKV, our fantastic affiliate in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm able to bring you this show. There's so much going on today. I wanted to be able to bring you the latest because we do know there's some breaking news. Democratic caucus met behind closed doors where everyone spoke their mind. That's all we know. But so far, Joe Biden's still the nominee, still president of the United States. There's a lot going on. We're going to see House Republican leaders already met. Leadership at a press conference. Speaker Johnson, Scalise, and Stefanik held it. They were pretty fiery. Talked about the dangers of the border. And the president will deliver remarks tonight. High stakes, all his appearances. The 75th anniversary of NATO. And at 7:30 Eastern time, President Zelensky delivers his remarks at the Reagan Institute here over in Washington. So before, and bother me out today, Mike Rogers, Senate, he was on the House Select Committee on Intelligence, FBI, Army guy, wants to be the next senator from Michigan, feeling good about his chances, trailing in most of the polls, but has not formally got the nomination yet. But Joe Biden, whether he's on the ticket or not, means a lot to his future. So we'll discuss that. Busy hour. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I'm absolutely confident that when all NATO leaders convene here this week, it will be great. We prepared all the important decisions we'll make here on defense, on support for Ukraine, and not least on burden sharing that European allies are now really stepping up.
Jens Stoltenberg running NATO for now. He's about to give away his reins. High stakes for the alliance. 75 years of success. Can they keep it going, and can Joe pull it off?
Number two.
And then they introduced him and introduced me, and I walked out and I saw him, and he looked extremely pale, to put it nicely. And when he started to speak, I don't know, I thought his voice was weak. I didn't know exactly what was happening. It was strange.
That is President Trump talking to Sean Hannity last night about what he remembers from the beginning of the debate, 2024, RNC just 1 week away. Former President Trump has been staying away from the spotlight intentionally, but speaks out about the debate, his game plan, and whether, oh, by the way, who's the VP is going to be, and whether he thinks Biden's going to stay in.
Number one.
The point is, for a campaign based on honesty and decency, the spin about the debate appears to be blatant bull. And the redemption tour hasn't gone that much better. Can't we stress test this candidacy? Can't we open up the conversation?
Yes, you can, John Stewart. You should be able to. It's your party. Biden defiant. He's staying. Dems meeting to see their options as more details about President Biden's real health emerge and the media finally starts doing its job with real questions. But for me, it is way too late. I'll give an example. John Stewart behind the scenes was credited for doing a lot of things on these burn pits and different things with getting people who are suffering the after effects of 9/11, breathing in that toxic air, these rare cancers. When he was brought to the White House, I don't know the answer to this, but when he looked and talked to Joe Biden, did he seem like he was all there? We never got any of these reports. I mean, if Donald Trump acted erratically, we got all these reports in the Washington Post, people writing books about it behind the closed doors. This is what he was saying. This is what he was doing. This is what his lawyers were saying. We don't get any of them. But yet we knew when he did his basement campaign because of the pandemic, we knew he couldn't attract crowds. We knew he couldn't do interviews. We knew they had teleprompter responses to so-called unscripted interviews. We know he doesn't do anything without a teleprompter. People want to say, well, he steps up like State of the Union address. If you look at the content of the State of the Union address, it was absolutely terrible. It was a campaign speech ridiculing Republicans. It wasn't the state of the country while still sneaking in the fact that you're up for re-election. But there's a reason why Donald Trump's been quiet. And David Axelrod nails it. He said Trump's not talking about the Biden bad debate. Trump's campaign is not blitzing ads about it. And Lara Trump said last week it would be an affront to democracy if Joe Biden were not the nominee. Question, why do you think they are uncharacteristically holding fire? Because they want Joe to be the nominee. Even though Kamala's got some huge problems, she doesn't study, doesn't know policy, not good on her feet, not given a lot of responsibility, no accomplishments, there'll be momentum behind her. They already wrote a story in the New York Times today how Kamala Harris has really picked it up over the last few months after Robert Hur's report came out that said the president is a well-meaning elderly man with memory issues, as I paraphrase. She started picking it up. She loves abortion, thinks it's the best thing ever, and wants everyone to have an abortion. Even if you want the kid, have an abortion. She'd love it. And she found her, and now she's out there talking, taking fire for Anderson Cooper. So she ignores her job. She just makes appearances, doesn't even publish her schedule. But Joe Biden tries to save his job. Kamala Harris tries to prove that she's worthy of the job while not looking as if she wants the job. But if Joe Biden can't be the nominee, he can't be president, in my view. Because the only reason you're not nominee is because you can't be, you do it for 4 years. You can't do it for 4 months. You can't do it for 4 minutes. And I think we're going to see it. If he's got issues that have a Parkinson's doctor coming there 8 times over the last 8 months, you got issues. When you have to hold a pen in your hand during an interview, when you don't write anything down with George Stephanopoulos, you have physical issues. When you freeze up at Juneteenth, you have physical issues. When you get befuddled on every compound sentence or a paragraph that is unscripted, you have issues. But listen to how angry he is. Cut one.
The fact is that, you know, I think they have to acknowledge we had large crowds, enthusiastic crowds. And, you know, and now they're talking about whether I use a prompter. Well, I did it all extemporaneously. The fact of the matter is, I was using prompters, too. I don't get that. But at any rate, the bottom line here is that we're not going anywhere. I am not going anywhere. I wouldn't be running if I didn't absolutely believe that I am the best candidate to beat Donald Trump in 2024.
Yeah. Look, I think Trump has name recognition. I think he's going to be tough to beat anyway. People like Gavin Newsom's record can't stand up to scrutiny. Gavin Newsom can stand up and speak, but when you find out what he stands for and what he's done, he'll fall flat on his face. Governor Whitmer, is that charisma? She kept her job because abortion was on the menu. What they say is, and I've talked to experts over the weekend, one lawmaker told me, they worry about Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket with the press protecting her and with Josh Shapiro or Governor Whitmer as number two. Number one, women power. Got it. Number two, they look at Josh Shapiro as a moderate. I don't know enough about him, but they look at him as a moderate. So you got a battleground state, a popular governor from a battleground state where Donald Trump is leading right now, according to the Emerson poll, by 4 points in the last poll. So does that bring that into play? And does Trump, is Kamala Harris, pick Shapiro, does Trump say, man, I need Virginia now. I'm going to go get Virginia. I'm going to go get Glenn Youngkin. Is that part of the delay? I believe if I was to, right now, they said, Brian, I need a bet. I got money. I got a bet on a vice president. I think it's Marco Rubio. I think the problem with Doug Burgum is that 0 week abortion ban. It wasn't his idea, but the legislator in North Dakota put it on his desk. He signed it. Republican to Republican, what's he going to do? Overall, Joe Biden staying in the race is imperative to Trump's success. I'm not saying he can't beat everyone, but if you have the momentum of a mini scrum, they call it a blitz, of Josh Shapiro, Governor Whitmer, Wes Moore, Governor Newsom, Pritzker. Who knows who they'll pull out? They all go in. And they have momentum coming out of August into September, even though money will be back and they couldn't get to the millions that, maybe Biden has. You could see them painting Donald Trump as a threat to the democracy, and maybe that resonated with independents. I'm just saying it's a scenario Republicans rather not explore. They rather have something more predictable. But the fact that he's in the race is fascinating. As Andy McCarthy told me, as Kevin McCarthy, although Andy McCarthy does talk to me a lot, told me on Saturday night, he was kind enough to join me live. He came out and said, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. And if you look at the fact that we're at this point, it is something that's akin to scandalous. And one of the reasons it is actually happening is because of Jill Biden, cut four.
And you're seeing Jill out there. She's a hard campaigner. I will tell you, it's much different of why I know that they're going to stay in this race. Jill doesn't want to leave either. Many times when we had meetings in the Oval Office, Jill was there as well. Many times, I don't think she's there for policy. I think she's there to give him comfort and direct the meetings.
Right. And they believe this whole scandal and this cover-up is bigger than Watergate. If you think about it, I mean, they say Wilson, this goes down in history. Well, Woodrow Wilson had a stroke, didn't tell anybody how bad it was. His wife was basically running the country. Pretty bad, right? When Eisenhower had a heart attack and he was 68 or 69, everybody knew about it. When he felt like he was ready to recover, he published his doctors came out and said he's going to be fine. He came out, ran, got another 4 years. By the way, some sad news. Senator Jim Inhofe, a real impactful, patriotic guy from Oklahoma, a longtime senator there, has passed away at the age of 89. Had a brief illness, and he was just a great guy. And people of Oklahoma, KRMG and our other affiliates in Oklahoma especially, he's such an impact, bigger than life. When he ran, he won. And when he went out there, when it came to defense, he was among the most staunchest defenders of the defense industry and would hold their feet to the fire, too. So he has passed away. He was born November 17, 1934. No word yet on what took his life. When you get to be that age, I don't really think that that's the biggest story. The biggest story is the impact he's made. He actually went to the University of Tulsa. He is a guy, an Oklahoman through and through. So he'll be missed. He was replaced by Mark Wayne Mullen, came out of Congress. Then you have Senator Lankford. So they still have impactful senators there. Jim Inhofe, dead at the age of 89. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
For some Democrats, this was the worst of all worlds because he was better than he was in the debate. On the other hand, how could he not be? And on the other hand, he wasn't as compelling and crisp and clear as he would need to be to settle the issue of his questions about his mental acuity. And he refused to agree to independent medical tests to determine whether there's some medical condition going on here that Americans would have a right to know about if they were going to reelect him as president. So this is more of a holding action than determining, I think, which course is ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Susan Page is USA Today saying that on the Sunday shows, you know, we didn't know about any of this. You had to know about a lot of this. I mean, the freezing was new. I mean, if somebody who doesn't pride himself on not being a good dancer, to see him frozen there was bizarre. Also, to see him pausing with the Stephanopoulos interview almost every answer, there was a beat and a half he was late to. And some of the things that he said, as Jake Tapper points out, they were unacceptable. They never would have been scrutinizing this. They would love to be all over Trump right now. But first thing they had to do is get rid of Biden. And Jake Tapper, I'm wondering if him and Dana Bash, they did a good job as moderates, the moderators of the debate. I'm wondering if they changed their opinion on Trump after seeing it all together. They just think that Biden's terrible. We'll have to see. Here is Jake Tapper going after Joe Biden on his interview, for example. Here's an example of on Morning Joe when he just called in yesterday. Cut 22.
In reality, 72% of voters say that they believe President Biden is too old. That's according to CNN's most recent polling. Voters have been saying this for quite a long time. The reality is that the Democratic elites are mostly late to acknowledge these age and ability issues compared to the rest of the public.
Okay. Number one, he came out and said on Joe Biden, said, I'm Joe Biden, and it's the elites that want me out. This guy's been around Democratic Party forever. The elites go to him. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, they go to him. You were vice president. Of course you're with the elites. That's who's giving you all the money. You act like you're some working class guy getting money. You lost the working class vote, too. I don't know how you did that, but you did. And by the way, Jake Tapper, have you thought about what people have been saying behind closed doors? Were you thinking about bringing that up before? Arizona, here are the polls. Bloomberg study. This is, I'll start with Emerson. In Pennsylvania, Trump up 48-43. Wisconsin, Trump up 3. In Michigan, Trump up 45-44. That's a lot closer. Nevada, Trump still up by 6. Of course, he lost Nevada last time. He lost Arizona, too. He's up by 4. Georgia, I believe he's up 2. I can't really read my writing there. My bad. Bloomberg, it's a lot different. Trump up by 3 in Arizona. Nevada, Trump up by 5. Wisconsin, Biden up by 3. Michigan, Biden up by 5. Wow, I hope that's an outlier. In Pennsylvania, Trump up by 7. Georgia, Trump up by 7. In North Carolina, which Joe Biden thinks he's going to take, at least they're trying, he's up by 3. And I think Trump's got to take that as a battleground state. Here's more from what Tapper was saying. And I'm just astounded. This is CNN, by the way. Sometimes I have their panels are Biden bashers now. Here's an example. This is what he's talking about. They use one of the Biden clips here to talk about what a terrible night he had. And Jake Tapper goes off. Cut 23.
Look at my career. I've not had many of those nights. It was a terrible night, and I really regret it happened. But the fact of the matter is, how can you assure you're going to be on you know, faith that can intervene on your way to go to, you know, work tomorrow? Age wasn't, you know, the idea. I'm too old.
The fact of the matter is, how can you assure you're going to be out on, you know, on your way to go, you know, work tomorrow? Age wasn't, you know, the idea that I'm too old. Keep in mind, that soundbite is supposed to be reassuring to those Democratic supporters who have gone wobbly. Many Democratic officials with whom I've spoken are worried that President Biden and his family and his inner circle appear to be in complete denial, not just about whatever might be wrong with him, but the state of his candidacy right now.
Right. You could have pointed this out in 2020. He was not well in 2020. I'm not talking about gaffes. Gaffes are when he points out to people in the Rose Garden, he forgets what spouse has passed away on St. Patrick's Day when he was vice president. He made some faux pas. It just shows he's just haphazard, unrehearsed. He goes out with Barack Obama, and he embarrasses Barack Obama, especially in his first term. He was constantly embarrassing the administration with dumb things he said. They just salted him away in the second 4 years. Then he comes out after 4 years off in 2020 to take on Trump, and the pandemic saved him. But Jake Tapper never reported on that. CNN never reported on some of these mistakes, some of these miscues. Never reported that he was taking teleprompters everywhere and still struggling for what he read. Never reporting that stage direction on his little cards, say hello and walk to the end of the table, literally was the stage direction. Here's more. And we were supposed to, I just pointed out two clips I'd like. But when Eric and Pete were pulling this, they pulled out 5 Jake Tapper clips because they could not believe it. Listen to this. Cut 24.
Did you ever watch the debate afterwards?
I don't think I did, no.
He doesn't think he did? After facing increasing pressure to demonstrate in public an ability to take questions and respond cogently for a lengthy period of time live about what he wants to do with the United States, his message, his plans, his policies, the president and his team have not held a press conference to demonstrate just that. He continues to do what he has done sparingly in the past, a short taped sit-down with an anchor, in this case, George Stephanopoulos of ABC News.
Right. 8.5 million people watched it. They probably watched some of the replay. Yeah, of course, he couldn't remember why George Stephanopoulos didn't ask yes or no. I mean, if he asked Nikki Haley, he would have been all over Nikki Haley. Nancy Mace would have just tried to kill him. J.D. Vance would have killed him. But instead, let him go. Well, he's old. Well, he's a president. Crazy. Mike Rogers next. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And the only guy who can bring this to a conclusion, this war, is actually President Trump. And I think the NATO allies and the leaders understand that. They know that's not going to happen with President Biden. Look, President Biden has not talked to Vladimir Putin in 2 years. I don't care who you are. You have to talk to not only friends, you have to talk to adversaries. And they've got to bring this war to a conclusion.
In a way, I love General Kellogg, but I don't know if I agree with that. What would I say to Vladimir Putin? Keep bombing children's hospitals? Love it? I don't know. Maybe Mike Rogers feels different. You know, he was on the House Select Committee on Intelligence, FBI, Army. Now, after serving in the House, taking some years off to having a successful podcast, now wants to be the next senator for Michigan. Welcome back, Mike. Great to so glad. Thank you so much for joining us. Your thoughts on what General Kellogg just said?
Listen, I would never call an adversary unless you have a plan for some outcome. And there is no plan for any outcome. This has been my problem with the Biden administration's handling of Ukraine from the beginning. What is their plan? What is their way to victory? So what are you going to do? Call Vladimir Putin and you know, say, do you have anything for our suggestion box? I mean, this is ridiculous. I worry a little bit that the weight of the circumstances and what Putin is trying to accomplish and what China wants him to accomplish and what Iran also would like to see happen isn't lining up with our efforts in Ukraine in a way that gets this thing to a conclusion. You can't just continue fighting for the next 10 years. Under the Biden plan, it's just, well, we don't want you to lose today. You know, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe next year, we just don't want you to lose. You got to either go in and do it right, or you got to find another alternative. And I, as I said, calling an adversary just to hang out, probably not a great idea.
So, yeah, he's the general. He spent his year in the military. You have the military background. I just don't know what I would say to Vladimir Putin. Congratulations on being a modern day Hitler. Congratulations on trying to marshal our enemies against us. Congratulations on ruthlessly killing children on purpose. Are you outraged, Mike Rogers, about the fact that when something happens like this in Gaza, it's never intended by the Israelis, but condemned globally? And when it happens intentionally by the Russians, we don't hear almost anything about anything about Vladimir Putin targeting a children's hospital, not even apologizing for it or offering an excuse. That was his target. That was the bullseye.
Yeah, no, this is what is up is down and what is down is up. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. And mainly it's because the press and the Democrats have kind of aligned on this notion that they need to keep, Joe Biden in office. And by doing that, they don't cover things like that. But, you know, where everyone seems to be easy outrage and virtual signaling by being upset with what's happening in Gaza, that's an easier place to get to. It is absolutely frustrating knowing what's at stake. And I'll tell you, you know, you watch that debate, you know, whatever we say back here is, you know, we can consume that and deal with that. But what our adversary saw, Brian,
I know,
worries me to death. Because what they just said is in the next 7 months, I'm not sure who's in charge. They clearly don't have good foreign policy chops, whoever it is, because they've created a mess around the world. Now would be the time to do something. I mean, clearly, that's what I worry about. And there is no conversation about, hey, why don't you do what's right for the country? If you can't handle and you have to put the world, tell the world you can only attack us between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. And by the way, there's also nap time in there, so please don't bother us then either. I mean, it's comical if it weren't so damn serious.
So what Democrats are more wary of, not only losing to Donald Trump, but they're also worried about themselves, especially in battleground states like yours. Now, John Tester, you have an open seat. You're going against Slotnick, it looks like. You haven't officially got the nomination yet, but it's going to happen. John Tester writes, President Biden has got to prove to the American people, including me, that he's up for the job for another 4 years. If I asked John Tester that 2 weeks ago before the debate, of course, he's got my full support, right? We won't ask him to testify. But are these guys pretending as if the debate was actually an enlightening experience? They had no idea how bad he was. You know, you've been inside Washington circles. Was this a secret?
No, God, no. This is maybe the greatest political cover-up of all time. I mean, they knew that he was having problems. His staff knew that they were having problems. Senior Democrats, right? I mean, all of that would be open knowledge in those circles in Washington, D.C. And they were just thinking that they were going to get away with fooling the American people, you know, try to get the guy elected, drag him across right. the finish line, and deal with it later. And, you know, what should offend us all and why the Democrats should be punished is, you know, that's why there's no definitive action on the border. That's why there is the rest of the world is moving out aggressively against the United States. That's why the Russians send a nuclear-powered submarine to Cuba. That's why the Chinese open up and expand espionage activities and signals intelligence operations in Havana, 90 miles off our shore. It's because of that. And so there is no pushback. There is no counter. You know, they're doing everything by committee, we presume. And every senator knew it, and every Democrat representative knew it. And they've been hiding from it and hiding it from the American people. And we should punish them in November. People should say, I don't think so. You need to put the country first. And what they've done is jeopardized. I have a son in the United States military. You've jeopardized every one of the very brave men and women who stuck their hand up and said, I'll go serve when most won't. And guess what? That is completely and utterly an unfair place to put these people in, because you don't have the courage to say this guy probably shouldn't be president.
So, I mean, you look at Anita Dunn and you look at Mike Donilon. They're the most responsible because they put him out there and then they shield him from doing anything that's unscripted. Then there's people behind the scenes, Annie Tomasini, Anthony Burnell, Close Confidence. They're also working with Jill Biden behind the scenes to keep him locked up. Remember the Robert Hur report. He was an elderly man who forgets things. Remember the report saying that he's got to take a nap after the debate in order to get him while doing debate prep. When it started at 11, then he's got to have a nap after, and then he doesn't meet before or after with leaders in those cocktail parties where so much get done and personal relationships are built. He is too tired. He is telling you he can't do the job. So you've been down, you've been so experienced in politics. How does this continue? I mean, does he have all the leverage now to stay in?
Well, I mean, the Democrat, this is going to be interesting. You know, what's that old saying? When your enemy is committing suicide, say very little and hand them the rope. They're imploding. And here's the, you know, from a political side, I mean, I am worried generally about the state and well-being of our country, about what risks now yeah. are being imposed on us. That, to me, is the most serious thing. And it's not just the insiders. I think what you're going to see happen here, Brian, is all they're going to say, oh, it was, you know, Bob and Sally's fault. They're the ones that did that. Every Democrat in Washington, D.C. is complicit in this happening over the last 2 years. There is no way they didn't know. And they all came out and said, no, remember the campaign when they were all going out there saying, oh, I've been in meetings. He's the best he's ever been. He's so cognizant. He's sharp. He's funny. He's witty. Well, he's also asleep, apparently. And so you have to wonder about where their loyalties lie in this mess. Here's the good news for Republicans. I don't care what happens. The reason Americans are upset, this is just one more arrow in that quiver. They're upset because the Democrats don't understand the risks and consequences of an open border. They don't understand that their policies have caused average families to have their food budget fall short by the end of the month. Literally, I talked to a pastor a little while ago, Brian. And he's telling me that they went from about 200 families at the end of the month for his pantry to over 500 just in the last 8 months, because they can't make their food budget work to the end of the month because prices have gone up so much. And but guess what? No, you have no plan for that. They're running around talking about how important it is that they get this guy off the ballot so they can win elections. You know, this is why Americans are upset. I'm not even worried. I don't care what happens. We are going to beat them in November because they are wrong on so much and have done so much harm and damage to the United States and our standing in the world, despite what they were telling us they were going to do. Now, the rest of the world's thinking, hey, this is it. This is our time. America's in decline. Let's move out.
Mike Rogers, when you look at your policy, you're very pro-Israel. But yet President Biden is bleeding support because he's been too pro-Israel, even though he's splitting the baby as usual and now pressuring Netanyahu for a premature ceasefire. How do you expect to win Michigan if he bleeds support for being perceived pro-Israel and you actually are pro-Israel? How does that shake out for you?
So I went and met with, a fairly decent number of Arab leaders, Arab Muslim leaders in and around Dearborn. And they have an expression, as someone told me there, that it is better to be stabbed in the face than stabbed in the back. So they knew that I am pro-Israel on the way in. But remember, you know, Arab Americans and Muslim Americans specifically have a whole bunch of other issues beyond this. They're business owners. They're doctors. A lot of them, there was some, there were some jurists in the room. There were, as I said, business owners, doctors, engineers. They have made their life in America, and they have the same concerns. They want to know that they can put their kids in school. And by the way, gender identity politics isn't allowing a biological male in their daughter's locker room. So once we got through the issue of Israel and my staunch support of Israel, I talked about all the other things that are going to happen. And by the way, when this is done, Palestine's going to need international help. And I think the U.S. should be a part of that because we want peace in the region. You don't want terrorism to grow back in Gaza. Matter of fact, I argue there's not 120 hostages still left. There's 2 million hostages that Hamas is holding in Gaza, which is the people that
live
in
Gaza. I hope so, but I doubt it.
I doubt it too. I will tell you that there is this way forward as long as you're honest about it. Why they're upset, Brian, is because they were told one thing by the administration and Democrats, including my likely opponent going into the general election. Oh, no, we'll always be with you. Then they voted up front with Israel. Then they changed their mind on Israel. Then they said you can't have weapons. Well, I guess you can have weapons. That's why they're upset. This is one of those times where leadership is needed, and if you are strong in your belief and you can articulate why you are where you are and say, oh, by the way, there's a whole bunch of other issues we ought to be talking about, that's how I'm going to win over Arab Americans in Michigan.
Yeah, right now you're about 2 or 3 points off, but the last poll I saw is Emerson in June. What do your polls say?
We're in a statistical dead heat for the last three statewide polls, a statistical dead heat. And why that's important for all the seats that we're trying to take back across the country, there is one seat that doesn't have an incumbent, and the Republican challenger, in quotation marks here, is statistically in a dead heat. So if we get the resources that we need, today and tomorrow, and we're building out a ground game in Michigan like no other in the United States. That's how we're going to win this seat. And we're doing all of those, the mechanics, the non-sexy political things. We're doing all of that. And this puts us in the right place to go in to the general election. And here's the good news. I've never seen an election where all the top four issues are all Republican issues. The border, crime, cost of food and inflation, the economy, and of course in Michigan, EV mandates send our auto workers, as it should, into orbit because we're just signing our death warrant and sending the profits to China. And so we have a real opportunity in a state like Michigan to take a state that hasn't had a Republican in 30 years right, and flip it around.
Mike Rogers, you got the resume and the work ethic. Hopefully it pans out and the people of Michigan see that. Mike, thank you so much.
Hey, Brian, it's always great to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right, good. We're going to wrap up this hour in just a moment. We're trying to find out exactly what happened behind closed doors when the Democratic caucus met 3 hours ago. And in about 1 hour, we expect the Democratic senators to meet or some higher ups there, lawmakers, committee chairs, to talk about if they have a way forward to convince Joe Biden to back out or fully back him. Where they're at right now, a disaster for Democrats. Where Trump is at right now is stay out of the way until he takes center stage at the RNC. And if Biden gets to Friday, he most likely, barring an incident, stays the rest of the way because soon the RNC will get the spotlight. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Rather than respecting the American people and having an honest, at least partial conversation about what we had all seen, we were told immediately, these are not the droids you're looking for. The point is, for a campaign based on honesty and decency, the spin about the debate appears to be blatant bull. And the redemption tour hasn't gone that much better. It's 119 days. There are contestants on The Bachelor who haven't even met yet that will get married and divorced between now and the election. We have nothing but time. And by the way, I am in no way saying Biden's got to drop out. But can't we stress test this candidacy? Can't we open up the conversation? Do you understand the opportunity here?
Yes, John Stewart does, and he goes a little bit detail and starts bringing up in his opening monologue on Monday the other signs that Joe Biden was losing it. But no one ever brought that up before. You know, to his credit, he wasn't been he's only been doing, I think, 3 months of Comedy Central back in the Daily Show. Here's more. Cut 19.
Authoritarianism and Donald Trump aren't the only threats our democracy faces. An arthritic status quo, unable or unwilling to respond in any way to the concerns of voters who just received new and urgent information about their candidate, also erodes confidence and faith in the system of government. Honestly, though, get on board or shut the f*** up is not a particularly compelling pro-democracy bumper sticker.
Right. He doesn't like that. I just find it fascinating that we're looking at monologues and essays that don't have Donald Trump in it. And he's so smart. It shows the discipline of his team not to get involved. And when the RNC comes, it's going to be so welcomed by the DNC. They're going to wait till August. And if they have Joe Biden as a candidate, along with a crime-ridden city that saw 117 people shot over the 4th of July holiday, I guess that's 2 or 3 days, I mean, where we see a mayor so inept and idealistic, wants to make sure that every black kid, no matter how many crimes he or she commits, never goes behind bars. That's the city that they picked, a city they already won and a state they didn't need. That's where they're going to be. And guess who's going to be there, too? The pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas wing of the party and people from around the globe. And they'll have Joe Biden not to rally around. They'll have some momentum if Biden steps away. The one thing that could happen, and I see it happening, is that Joe Biden's going to put himself in a stress test. He's going to go out to a million places. Maybe he'll take more of a breather next week. But you're going to see him on Thursday in a press conference. You're going to see him in NATO tonight having a speech and welcoming everybody there. You're going to see him maybe in an interview. And there's no way he can hold it together because he doesn't have it together. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to see me on stage talking about patriotism, history, and laughs. BrianKilmeade.com, the 27th, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania.
Do it now.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.